You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 12 August. We've got Merafe results due later this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nick Unza from Sanlam Private Wealth. A poor Goldfields update and an even poorer MTN. The MTN came out Wednesday after the close, but the stock was up 10%. I suspect if you've been watching some of those currencies that they operate in, the market expected it. Steve Binney from SAPI, latest results, dissolving pulp continuing to boost profits. Interestingly, third quarter is usually a softer quarter for them. These were some good numbers. And then Pierre Fourier from KPMG South Africa, global fintech investments falling to just over 50 billion in the first half. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. As fund net inflows reverse, Coronation launches ETFs. The fund manager is going to list six ETFs. And then from XM Oz, Renogen says liquid helium production train is now fully operational. Morning markets. U.S. markets were green. We saw the S&P and NASDAQ both up 0.5%. Over in the east, it is mixed. We've got Sydney down 0.1%. Tokyo is closed. Mountain Day. Gotta love their holidays. Hong Kong is down 0.2% and Tencent up 1%. Commodities green. Gold, 2,466. Brent, 79.77. Platinum, 9.28. And palladium, 8.92. The rand is 18.31. Bitcoin, 58,700. And top 40 opening call, we're looking for about a 350 point or a third of a percent to the green.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Unza, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning, the Goldfields update late on Thursday. We, of course, closed Friday. A lot of challenges, I suppose. South Deep there, Gurea Mine, I'm mispronouncing that quite badly. I mean, net effect is actually expecting headline earnings to be down a bit. This is management issues in a time when gold price is at all around records. How concerning is this, or is it a case of it will come right in time and these are just hiccups on the way?
Yeah, morning, Simon. I mean, it is concerning. I mean, there's no doubt about it, and more concerning when you look at an operation like this that in the past gold miners in South Africa are operating, can certainly blame it on logistics and Transnet and all the rest of it. This is purely at the foot of management, as you said, and production was clearly down. And I mean, you made a point there, is this sort of hold on and wait for it to get better? But, when you are completely reliant on a single metal where the spot price is sitting at a record high, I mean, for shareholders and management, I mean, this is terrible. I mean, you want to sort of reap the benefits at record higher gold prices. Get the production right and gold prices, 20% lower, you've missed this entire run. And unfortunately, I think this is very frustrating for shareholders, I think.
And then on the flip side was MTN, came out just after the close on Wednesday. On the surface, a horror update. But I think if you've been watching the Nigerian Naira and the Ghanaian Cedi, you probably expected it. Certainly, the market seemed to have up 10% on Thursday.
Yeah. I mean, face value, they were a shocker. Yeah. And, I was trying to explain to a client of mine, he's like, to understand why the share price is up. It's shocking. I was like, well, this is a case of Simon, you will remember the old saying, what's in the price, buy the rumor, sell the news. And I certainly said, when you look at what the Naira has done, I mean, it, back in 2022, it was 400 to the dollar. It's now 1,450. It is half, 50% of MTN's earnings. You could argue quite successfully that this is in the price. The broader MTN story, the likes of Ghana, Uganda had a really good trading update. Yeah. The other jurisdictions are doing pretty well. And I suspect, as I said, this is probably in the price. And, when that Naira got to the same price as the official rate and the black market rate, which is sitting roughly now, I certainly think there's probably the sort of green shoots coming. I suspect that's why the price ran so hard.
So is that then opportunity? Because our telcos, I mean, across the board, I mean, the charts are just not pretty. But, I mean, MTN, you know, what, a couple of 100 million subscribers. Fintech moving in the right direction. And if the Naira stops falling, I mean, it's, you know, it's not good, but at least it's kind of in the base and resets it.
Well, Simon, I mean, a classic risk-reward. I mean, how much, what is your risk to reward? How much downside have you got? I mean, sitting at 83-odd rand, and you seem to be the bottom, probably in MTN, around about the mid-70s. Mm. You know, the risk, I guess, is to the upside if you miss the upside. I mean, it could get back to 100, 110, which is what our valuation is in the near term. So that clearly is the risk. It's already in that sort of price. And MTN, it's always one of the Africa's most recognizable brands. You know, yeah. It's got a huge shoot of kudos in that space. And of course, that MasterCard Visa transaction still going through on the fintech side, a big chunk of dollars coming in. So I think, again, it's clearly the risk is probably already priced into the share.
I take your point on that. 110 probably seems reasonable. Nick Kunzos, Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning.
If seagulls were Haarded-Ars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Steve Binney, CEO of SAPI. We had a third quarter results out. EBITDA excluding special items up over 40%, that on sales up by 3%, and earnings per share 9 US cents, that 5 cents the corresponding quarter last year. Steve, appreciate the time today. Seasonally, third quarter is a softer quarter for SAPI, but these came out with, I mean, looking at the surface, I mean, a good set of numbers notwithstanding.
Indeed, we were satisfied with the results. Obviously, you know, over the course of the last year or so, we've had very volatile economic conditions. Mm. And with what we've seen as a gradual recovery in our paper businesses, I think there's hopefully more to come. But particularly pleased with the performance on the dissolving pulp side, which had a very strong quarter, and market conditions there are very good.
Yeah, you make the point in the results continue to be favorable. You're getting tight supply and strong demand. So it really is working on both sides of the equation. Are you able to meet that increasing demand?
Yeah, market is really good at the moment. What we've seen, obviously, post-COVID and economic challenges recently, there's been a strong recovery for DP. And we're fortunate that there's no new capacity that we're seeing coming on board globally. Market demand picking up about 5% a year. Mm-hmm. So it's keeping the conditions very tight, and we've seen better pricing. And to your question specifically, you know, we're obviously trying to make as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Now, we'd love more capacity, but we're fully sold out, and we continue to see, as I say, good market conditions.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, if you sold out, you wished for more, but there's a practicality there. You also mentioned the packaging and textile markets were sort of picking up, and you talk around there sort of a global consumer sentiment sort of showing signs of improvement. And that certainly is, you know, where we are. And if we think about the consumer, inflation, interest rates, and if we look forward a year when hopefully rates are lower and inflation even lower still, another space that's looking positive in the future.
Yeah, we're more optimistic as we look forward, as those interest rates hopefully come down soon. What we've seen in the past sort of two quarters is kind of mixed conditions. The US has been strong for us. That's a very resilient economy, whereas mm-hmm. Europe has been more challenging. Places like Germany, which are big markets for us, the consumers there are still under pressure. So we're hoping for a little bit of a bounce there, hopefully in the quarters ahead. In South Africa, we mainly supply the citrus fruit export market. They've had a softer conditions this year. But again, you know, if we look forward, say, 12 months, we are hoping for the recovery there too.
Yeah, citrus has had a challenge. I think that's well known. Your graphic paper sales, volumes are up, but you talk around there's some structural issues, and we've chatted before around sort of the restocking and destocking. How's that looking in terms of that cycle?
So broadly, we know the long-term trend is downwards to use graphic paper, obviously, with the digital age and iPads and the like. So there is a long-term trend downwards. Because of the economic situation that we encountered, you know, over the last 12, 18 months, it's been under further pressure. So a little bit of that is cyclical, but there is a long-term trend downwards. More recently, we have seen a little bit of recovery, and I'm hopeful that we'll get some more, but it's never going to get back to kind of the pre-COVID levels. So I would expect longer term for it to continue to decline. Our strategy, as you know, is to kind of replace the graphic paper with opportunities more in the packaging space, and that's where we see significant growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I take your point on that. Looking sort of more broadly at the business, I mean, how's your input costs been? We've mentioned inflation is down from those peaks of a couple of years ago. Europe and the US at one point had 40-year highs in the inflation space. Has that sort of come down to more manageable levels, or are you perhaps even seeing some deflation in input costs, or is that too hopeful?
Actually flattened off in, I would say, in the last two or three quarters. However, we are starting to see some increases in prices. So I would actually expect a little bit of upward pressure. We buy a lot of pulp to make the paper, and those prices are starting going up. Other prices of raw materials like chemicals and the likes are flat. The other challenge we have in the short term is global shipping costs have started going up once again, you know, with the problems in the Middle East and the like. It's actually pushing up shipping and container costs. So I would anticipate a little bit of upward price pressure there.
You mentioned that because I wanted to ask around logistics. And I get the point, you know, the costs are rising, but is the process, is logistic channels working smoothly? Because, of course, I mean, we're well past the pandemic, but there was all sorts of chaos around logistics back then. Are things at least getting from A to B in the sort of timelines that you would anticipate?
Yeah, it has become more challenging very recently with all of the challenges in the Middle East. So the shipping lines are now having to travel around South Africa, around the Cape, and that's lengthening times and making less availability of vessels. Mm-hmm. So it pushes up, it does cause some delays, and as I say, pushes up costs as well.
I hadn't thought, of course, its availability as it takes longer to route around that containers just use longer. We'll leave it there. Steve Binney, Sappi CEO, appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Thinking around paper stocks, packaging companies generally, is that a sector that you invest into? Some parts of it, as Steve Binney suggested there, you know, the magazines. I mean, that is a declining industry, but dissolving pulp and others is certainly looking better. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in StanLib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Pierre Fourie, partner financial services at KPMG SA. Pierre, appreciate the early morning time. The H1 24 edition of the KPMG's Pulse of FinTech survey out recently and showing that global FinTech investment down to, 51.9 billion in the first half, falling. But I suspect there's some good reasons for that, and a large part of it probably cost of capital more than anything else, perhaps.
Good morning, Simon, and that's quite correct. And there are a couple of things, particularly the high interest rates. And then also globally, with one third of the world having elections, FinTech remain very, very cautious investing. However, what we do see is that people do invest in developing new solutions in the FinTech industry.
But, And certainly, I mean, you made that point. I mean, payments remains the largest portion of FinTech. And I mean, payments has been a hot space for a while now and probably continues on to, but it remains big. And then the next was RegTech. And I had to check up RegTech, regulatory technology, which I suppose is just behind, smaller in terms of numbers, about a quarter the size. But again, picking up nicely. And there's still activity happening. It's not as if everything's disappeared.
No, not at all. And if we look at the South African scenario, RegTech, particularly when we come to anti-money laundering solutions and the fines that the regulators are issuing, it needs to invest to develop new solutions. And practically, automate solutioning, supporting the payments industry, but also supporting some of our newer solutions like AI, and providing support for crypto investments. And that's where most of the investments is currently happening.
I was going to say, the CBDC, central bank digital currencies and the like. I mean, RegTech is almost in the, you know, I mean, the payments are certainly big, and of course that's going to continue to be big. RegTech has that wind at its back, where it is, you know, as it says in the name, it's the regulatory environment, and we're going to see a continued pickup in regulations and I suppose closing of loopholes and the like. It is a space, it might have had a tougher period, but it's going to be big going forward. It's not disappearing anywhere anytime soon.
Not at all. And particularly in Europe, we see more regulation on cybersecurity as well, bringing in new angles to regulation rather than just with additional anti-money laundering and your typical prudential regulations. But where global regulators are now going is how to support the payment industry. And what's interesting last week with our deputy governor, also starting to make noises around new entrants into the banking sector and lowering the entry levels with new levels of banking licenses to accommodate new payments providers.
Yeah, I do remember that. And he was talking around, I mean, almost a sort of a tiering in our banking space. You mentioned AI there. I mean, certainly AI continues to perhaps be the hottest sort of space that we're seeing in tech generally and in fintech. A lot going into it. Still very early days, but still very exciting days in that space.
It's very early days. And everybody is trying to find the problem to have AI as being the solution. And the consumer are wanting to have more input into the solution, but it's difficult due to the newness of it.
Mm-hmm. I take your point. I mean, ChatGPT, I'm trying to think, it's actually still less than 2 years since it arrived. The MAU area, it's Europe, it's Middle East, it's Africa, that saw the biggest drop. I mean, is that just, you know, when we think of fintech and deals and the like, we think North America predominantly. Is EMA a concern, or is that just one of those things that sort of happens from time to time and it did just have a weaker drop off?
As I said in the beginning, what we see in EMEA particularly was the amount of elections we've had. We've had Germany, Britain. And when we have elections, people don't like to invest in areas of uncertainty. And knowing policy certainty is probably more important than knowing the party that's leading the elections of the elections.
Yeah, I take your point. Yeah, it's not necessarily, you know, the who's, as you say. It is around that policy and that certainty which always wants. The big unicorn deals, the billion-plus deals, the report, only five in one sense.
Correct.
Five is big, but five is certainly a smaller number than usual. And I suppose this just ties in. It goes back to cost of capital. It goes back to, as you mentioned, the elections around there. We're going to see less of those mega deals in this type of environment.
We are. However, we are expecting to see much more in 2025, mm-hmm. When we have more stability and interest rates coming down and capital will become more available. And it's interesting in South Africa, if you looked at both Sanlam and FirstRand starting fintech divisions, and you can see even them are setting up to become more active in the play of buying more fintech players and developing and be competitive in the global scenario.
I take the point, and that's just it. I mean, when the report came across my desk and I saw the headline, I'm like, oh, this is not a worry, but maybe a less ideal. It is situation specific, and this is not we go back to the high cost of capital and rates will come down. We go down to uncertainty. The elections are being held, and by and large, they are being peaceful. This is perhaps more a blip, certainly not the sort of end of the road for fintech. Fintech is with us to stay forever and a day.
Absolutely. And we may see a drop now, but all that is going to happen 2025, 2026 is we are going to catch up. And I see the momentum becoming even higher than what it was in the 2021 when we saw the top peak elements of it.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, payments aren't going away, RegTech's not going away, and AI is only going to get way bigger. We'll leave it there, Pierre Fourie, Partner Financial Services, KPMG SA. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Keith McLachlan way back on Thursday. Rotation from large tech into small caps. Well, that rotation seems to have faded already. It was an exciting 2 weeks, but maybe it was just 2 weeks. We asked if you're buying the fairly cheaper US small caps. Half said nope, staying with tech. Third said yes, tech is expensive. The rest said always having some small caps, particularly US. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Where to invest in Africa.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.